Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar entitled The SAP Zero-Day Wake-Up Call, What CISOs and CIOs Need to Know. My name is David DePrill, and I'll be moderating today's session. Before we get started, I do have some general housekeeping notes. First, I want to point out the questions module within the ON24 platform. If you do have questions, please enter them at any point during the presentation, and if time allows, we will answer whatever questions we can at the end of the session. And if you need to resize the video, you can always adjust the size of the media player on your end to make it bigger or smaller, depending on your preference. And finally, please note that this webinar is being recorded and a link will be sent to you. With us today, I'm happy to welcome Cody Barrow, CEO of Eclectic IQ, Charles Carmichael, CTO of Mandiant Consulting, which is a part of Google Cloud, David Walt, founder and CEO of Night Dragon, and Mariano Nunez, CEO and co-founder of Anapsys. Before we get into the panel discussion with our esteemed guests, I wanted to briefly set the stage for the audience. We're living in a fast-moving era of unprecedented connectivity. We're sprawling, cloud-connected, and even agentic AI-connected digital systems underpin the critical business foundations of your modern enterprise. And SAP is one of the global leaders in delivering these digital systems, bringing together these business critical operations that span finance, procurement, HR, supply chain, customer experience, amongst others. In recent months, organizations worldwide were rocked by the news of multiple waves of mass exploitation zero-day attacks that were directly targeting vulnerable SAP business systems, an attack that was really the first of its kind. Now, as the news continued to make major headlines, CISOs and CIOs were scrambling to understand if they were affected. If so, how badly, and how to mitigate or remediate? If not, were they protected? And so now business leaders are stepping back a bit and taking time to evaluate what these new direct attacks on their mission-critical SAP systems, their organizations moving forward, and how to ensure that their most critical systems and all the sensitive or confidential data that they contain are insulated from future attacks. So without further ado, let's turn to our panel and hear directly from the gentlemen whose teams were on the front lines throughout this whole zero-day attack campaign. Charles, I'm going to start with you. How were these SAP zero-day vulnerabilities and these attacks discovered in the first place? What was unique about this?
Sure, thanks a lot, David. So let me start with what happened in March. So the Mandiant team that monitors our organizations' environments on an ongoing basis started noticing the exploitation of SAP NetWeaver systems. We started seeing a little bit of exploitation activity, such as the deployment of web shells, but we didn't really see a whole lot of activity afterward. So we reported that to our clients, and unfortunately, at the time, we just didn't know that there was a zero-day vulnerability. Fast forward to April, SAP learns about mass exploitation, or at least some exploitation of this vulnerability, and they disclose the attacks, they disclose the patch. And as we learned that there was a particular vulnerability in SAP NetWeaver, we started looking back into our caseload data. We started to realize that actually there were a lot of organizations that were directly impacted. And what we saw was that a lot of organizations that were running SAP NetWeaver essentially saw or had the same activity on a whole lot of systems. It was the deployment of web shells. It was, in some situations, it was some additional backdoors that were deployed. And in a very small subset of those organizations, we saw some additional attacker activity, such as the archiving of SAP configuration data and the exfiltration of that data. But with something that was somewhat unique to us was that we didn't see further movement at the victims that we worked with. It's certainly probable that there were some organizations that had further attacker activity. So we struggled a little bit to understand what was the actual motivation by the threat actor. And it took us a little bit of time to start to connect some dots between the infrastructure that was used in the early days in March timeframe, as well as later on in April after this vulnerability had been disclosed.
That's really interesting. Dave, I'm going to turn to you. Why do you believe attackers are really now targeting SAP applications directly? Are these cloud and agentic AI initiatives increasing the risk for organizations?
Yeah, greetings, everybody. And Charles, Cody, Mariano, great to see you guys. Wish we were doing this in person. It's a lot more fun. So I hope everybody's doing well. Listen, you know, after being in this market, much like everybody else on the call for the last couple decades, you know, we've been watching, you know, these mission critical application areas for indications that they would be exploited. And, you know, we've seen breadcrumbs of this over the years, but, you know, this is a wake up call, as the webinar has. I mean, a major SAP zero day with exploits, with the type of targets, with the breadth and scope of the targets. It's one of those seminal moments that you kind of realize that, you know, much of our infrastructure is quite vulnerable. And when you start to see an application the size and scale of SAP have these exploits, you kind of realize that, you know, this has a danger level that's very high in a number. And when you look back on it, right, you know, almost all the Fortune 500, Global 2000 uses SAP, 40,000 plus companies, you know, nearly everybody's system of record for financials, in many cases, manufacturing data, bill of materials, supply chain data sitting in SAP systems. So it's kind of where the gold's at. It's right. And it's the core data. And now we've watched this world of SAP, which once was running largely on mainframes, you know, running in isolated air gap systems, you know, really, really change form factor. And many of the companies I'm on the board of, you know, we've now moved the SAP environment to the cloud. We've transformed the way in which we interact with SAP by leveraging RPAs and robotic process automation to share receivables, payables, general ledger data across, you know, many components of our subsidiaries. So the RPAs open up access to BAPI interfaces that are not really designed well. You know, when I think of secure by design, you know, many of this is legacy code that's vulnerable. And in this case, the NetWeaver middleware being vulnerable. And when you start to put that all together, where the walls are coming down, you know, we're moving it out of data centers and out of mainframes. We're now really don't have a lot of security controls and monitoring for SAP specifically, nor anomalous behavior detection or identity controls to look for anomalies. You start to worry, here's one of our core application areas that's quite vulnerable. And the days of security by obscurity are over, and suddenly mass exploitation can occur and do it at a very large and global scale. And, you know, you start to see not only crime elements that can be brought to bear on an SAP system like ransomware, but espionage scenarios as well. You start to look at a pretty significant, almost perfect storm scenario for SAP and its environment. And it's true, not just of SAP, but of all the legacy mission critical applications that are digitally transforming to the cloud, like Oracle, supply chain applications, supply chain logistics. I mean, these are the heart of companies. And as you start to see the attackers' knowledge and ability to exploit these areas, it's quite the wake up call. So yeah, here we are today talking about
it. Yeah. You know, I'd like to turn the attention maybe to that actual exploit and those attacks. Cody, were there any patterns in the types of organizations or the industries that were being targeted?
Yes, thanks. And also thanks to David. I think it's probably my fault or European Vacation's fault that we're not on site. So I'm sure we can do that next time. Also, a lot of very interesting stuff about the evolution from RPA to agentic AI and things like that that I think are going to be worth discussing maybe at the end if we have some time. But the bottom line is that, as Dave mentioned, SAP tiers sit behind a lot of finance, logistics, manufacturing, HR workflows. It's effectively business critical, which means that there's a wide range of potential targets. So this is something that threat actors can really leverage. The exploit has been weaponized. It's actually relatively easy to weaponize. It's certainly publicly available. We saw that today, but it's also been out there for months. Our analysis shows a relatively clear concentration of threat activity against high-value sectors. So finance, government ministries, manufacturing, other critical infrastructure providers. So what that means is that these are sectors, these are organizations, these are areas where every CISO knows Service availability is usually a top three priority for most organizations. So they go right after that. They go right after data loss, and that can allow threat actors to then demand higher ransom payments because they know that they're able to really inflict pain on you. And we also see nation state actors leveraging this. So I think it's also maybe something, if we have time, we can discuss later, but we are seeing a little bit of back and forth with the threat actor group Shiny Hunters, claiming that the Chinese stole their zero day from them, and so there's a little bit of overlap here. We don't think that's true, probably, because we have seen Chinese Nexus APT groups exploiting this vulnerability. And we can probably chat about that, I think, in the next section. So bottom line is that we have definitely seen a pattern. It's high-value targets, and it's widespread.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Mariano, could you walk us through maybe how these SAP zero days were actually exploited, what makes them so dangerous, and wouldn't traditional SAP security controls potentially protect against these attacks?
Absolutely. Thank you, David. And good to see all of you. As you mentioned, Dave, I think we've all been in the space for a long time, and it's very interesting to see what's going on here over the last few months. So maybe let me just start by saying that we're talking about a vulnerability in this webinar, right? We're talking about one SAP zero-day vulnerability that was being exploited. But just to frame the conversation and understanding from people, think about SAP the same way that Microsoft does it, is releasing new security patches every month, right? So you're dealing with 20, 30 new SAP vulnerabilities every month that your team have to really implement patches for, prioritize, and really remediate in the organizations. We're talking about one, right? So if you're struggling with visibility into those security patches and SLA, think about this is how this problem can compound. In this specific case, the vulnerability we're talking about was affecting a component on SAP web applications, right, on the web framework. So the first point is that if you have SAP applications that were internet facing, then they could be potentially exploited remotely as well. The specific component that was vulnerable in this case is in something that is called SAP Java Application Server, or SAP NetWeaver Java Application Server, which is a term that I'm sure many in the security community are not familiar with. Think about this as the underlying, the middleware platform that builds solutions like the SAP ERP, CRM, supply chain systems, portal environments, process integrations, business intelligence solutions. So you're talking about an underpinning fundamental layer of SAP business applications. Technically, just going technically for a second here, the vulnerability itself was a Java deserialization issue in this SAP component, by which essentially remote attackers could execute arbitrary commands in SAP without any type of authentication, right? So one of the vectors they used was also to drop, as Charles mentioned, web shells post-compromise, but they had also the ability to take full control of the systems and execute full commands even without touching the disk, as I'm sure we'll discuss later. What's important to know here to your question on the traditional or legacy security, SAP security controls, historically, that's basically been two kinds of controls. Once you have the network and firewall kind of controls, as Dave also was mentioning, kind of being behind the firewall and the walls coming down, the reality is that even in this case, network and firewalls cannot stop these type of attacks, right? This is authorized connectivity into the web components, so the firewall will not be a way to stop this. And the second one is all the identity, GRC, segregation of duties type of controls that have been the synonym of SAP security over the last decades. Well, that's actually cannot stop this either, right? So all these attacks and exploitation we've seen will bypass both network security rules and GRC or segregation of duties controls, essentially giving attackers full control over the victim's SAP business data and processes, bypassing all these traditional security controls and actually the standard audit features of SAP systems and the standard audit logs. So it's absolutely a critical exploit, critical vulnerability. We saw, as Cody was mentioning, on August 15th, the actual exploit was released publicly. So this was not released until August 15th, or was not known publicly until August 15th. And that actually shows you the level of understanding of SAP systems that attackers have, right? There was all this misconception for many years that hackers or cyber criminals do not know how to break into SAP systems. Well, I invite everyone to go and see that exploit, and you'll get a very clear understanding how capable they are in this domain and how much time and effort they put into developing SAP-specific exploits to compromise their victims.
So it sounds like there are very, very sophisticated threat actors with really deep knowledge of SAP that are now executing these particular attacks, which makes me think about, you know, what's their motivation, things along those lines. Charles, Cody, I know your teams have been able to capture some unique intelligence about many of these threat actors that are behind these attacks. I'd be curious to learn a little bit more about that. Charles, why don't I start with you, and then, you know, Cody, you can chime in and answer.
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, when we first saw the exploitation occur in March, we didn't really see a whole lot of post-exploitation activity. We saw the deployment of web shells and maybe some other backdoors. And in a very small subset of environments, we saw the threat actor package up SAP configuration data and exfiltrate it from a small number of victim environments. So it was hard for us to tell initially who was behind it based on the motivations. And as you look at the infrastructure that was used in the early days, we didn't initially see overlap. But later on, in late April, we started seeing overlap between a China Nexus or multiple China Nexus clusters of intrusion activity interacting with web shells that were previously deployed in March. Now, from a maintain perspective, we struggle a little bit figuring out was the China Nexus groups that were accessing and interacting with the web shells in April that were deployed in March, was it all part of the same activity, or did we just happen to see a situation where these China Nexus groups knew about web shells, either because it was handed over to them or they scanned the planet and found the web shells that existed and just happened to interact with them? Something important to note about these web shells is that most of them that were deployed didn't require a password to interact with it. So it was pretty easy to scan the internet looking for these backdoors. And once you found these backdoors or these web shells, anybody could interact with them without a password. Some of them had passwords, but most of them didn't. And it's also really important to know, when you think about just the remediation here, a lot of companies, when they heard about the situation, they applied a patch and they moved on. What they failed to realize is that this vulnerability was mass exploited across the internet before the patch was made available. So as the maintain team was scanning the internet, looking for a combination of systems that were backdoored, systems that still weren't patched, systems that were patched but also had backdoors, we saw hundreds of systems exposed to the internet that were patched, but still had a backdoor readily available for anybody to access. And so it goes to show, and by the way, we even just yesterday re-ran a scan just to see, are there still active web shells out there for systems that are patched? And the answer is yes. Unfortunately, there's still a large number of organizations that didn't realize that there was more to do than apply the patch.
Mm. Cody, what did your team
describe? Because I know you also have some pretty unique insight into threat actor infrastructure and exploitation activity.
Yeah, thanks. So it is pretty interesting, because for us, you know, we had the same sort of observation that you had about the timeline. So we observed the vulnerability in March, but there really wasn't a whole lot of activity until around the SAP patch. And then we saw China Nexus, likely espionage-related exploitation focused on what we think is persistence and collection networks. So,
obviously,
we started.
Breaking up for
observing country we have access to. Say again.
So you're breaking up just a little bit. I'm sorry. Can you
breaking up?
Yeah, just breaking up just a little bit. I think we lost maybe in the past like 20 seconds or so. Let's say, if you just want to, you know.
That's really. I think it's the app, because I never have issues.
Well, we can see you perfectly fine, bud. All right. Well, while Cody's sorting that out, Dave, I'm going to quickly turn to you just for a quick second here. I'm thinking about larger like ramifications around the world, right? So these novel attacks clearly created some significant concern in government agencies and cyber commands across the globe, right? So maybe if you can give me some insight into, you know, what they're thinking, why they're so concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And you know, when you start to look at the series of events that had been occurring over the last, you know, 24 months or so, and then put this particular threat environment into that context, you start to see why everybody was so, you know, sort of at the ready, you know, shields up for, you know, a big potential additional exploit. And what I'm referring to in this case is what we call the typhoons, right? We've seen a whole series of China-led activity, first being Volt Typhoon, which was quite a wake-up call in itself, with a lot of activity on our energy and utility infrastructure. I'll leave the experts here for motivation on that, but let's just say it was pretty widespread and having a lot of ramifications related to that infrastructure. We then saw the Salt Typhoon series occur mm-hmm. on our telecommunications infrastructure, and including outages to many of our largest telecommunication operators, another significant event. And then what I was calling this SAP Typhoon to some regard, you know, when you start to see another major infrastructure, and as Charles laid out and Cody were laying out, you know, the ability to plant backdoors, even if you were patched, the access level to data in the SAP systems, both financial and manufacturing and supply chain. You look at the timing of tariffs, you look at the timing of the conversations between the United States and the Western world and China, and that puts you on very, very high alert for, you know, major campaigns like this, mm-hmm. especially if backdoors were able to be established at a system that would be very hard to eradicate those backdoors later with the full control that the attackers were able to maintain with this type of exploit. So that really, you know, created a very fast response process, and such a tribute to the team on the call here. You know, Charles, Mariano, Cody, all working together across continents and time zones to really, you know, effectuate a response. I can't tell you how proud I am over the years working with these folks, but also public-private partnership being worked as well, not just the United States public government, who was in transition at the time. We were able to work with the FBI cybercrime divisions, work with the U.S. Cyber Command, work with the U.S. Homeland Security CISA organizations, but really effectuate that response around the world. And we were able to communicate with over 15 cyber commands around the world with briefings and calls and hunt capabilities from the tools that Onapsis and Mandiant were able to supply. And, you know, all in days. And this also is a tribute to SAP, frankly, as well. While they had the zero day and the attack, the speed of which they were able to patch and fix it was remarkable, in my opinion, for a company of that size and scale and the governance they had around it. So we know cyber's a team sport and it takes a village to go solve these. And this was a great example of that. But when you look at it in context to your question around the big attacks we had been seeing and continue to see, you know, even post the SAP one here with SharePoint and others, you know, we're on high alert around the world, and that made everybody rally around this in a way that you can be really proud of, but you can also be very nervous about at the same time.
If you will. Cody, I want to come back to you just briefly. I think maybe the audio part has sorted itself out, but just a little bit more about the threat intel that maybe your team had kind of come across.
Yes, thanks. Apologies. I am on a local network, so it's very weird. Maybe it's Shiny Hunters out there, but we've already seen that there's some interest, right? So I think, you know, for us, it's very interesting to see China Nexus espionage actors. So, UNC5221, UNC5174, and some others, acting out there, focused on persistence and collection in critical infrastructure. But what's, I think, really interesting, especially maybe for those who aren't in the weeds on everything all the time, is that this exploit, fully public, is actually being run by really two different playbooks. One, state-aligned actors, which is really about long dwell time and strategic access, which means it's very good that that we have so many parties working with national governments and national certs, because this could actually play out over a long, very long time period. We may be seeing consequences of this for a very long time. And then the other playbook is criminal crews, right? Where they're really focused on how fast can I turn this exploit into money? So the common denominator that we see with this from a threat actor perspective is that this is a high value front door into the core of the business or the organization, which is of course why we're all here, why this is so dangerous and so interesting.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Mariano, thinking about this, there seemed to have been a lot of misinformation as the attacks were happening. I know everything was moving fast and furious, right? Can you give me a little bit of an insight into what was signal and what was noise?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, as Dave mentioned, we all, and really kudos and thank you to all of you here, because it was impressive to see how we can come together to defend. It was a very, very mission critical system that powers a lot of the critical infrastructure, right? So I think that was really, really amazing to see. I also want to stress what Dave said about SAP. SAP moved really, really fast. We worked very closely together with the teams. They were able to develop a second patch very quickly, also May 13th, based on what our threat intel found. So they've done a fantastic job in responding very quickly and communicating with their customers in this matter. But yeah, as Cody mentioned, right, we're talking about systems that have very critical data, very critical information from a confidentiality perspective, but also there is where the money is, right? So we see this interest from attackers going after these systems. We saw in some cases, as Charles mentioned, like companies or attackers exfiltrating sensitive SAP files and data. We've seen other cases where attackers move laterally to dozens of systems in the network. So definitely a variety of playbooks and attacks going on through this type of critical vulnerabilities. When back to your question in terms of the noise and the signal, right? I'm frankly a bit puzzled about some of the things we saw still. There was a lot of misinformation in the industry as this was going on. I think some was well-intentioned. Some I'm not entirely sure why this was done. I would say the first misinformation or misinterpretation, I would say, is what Charles said at the beginning, where I think this is more of a lack of understanding just on the concept of a zero day. Again, if you think about SAP operators, they have a really challenging job in terms of keeping SAP up and running, kind of optimizing their SAP workloads because they're mission critical. So in many cases, we saw that SAP operators and SAP administrators got this news about an SAP critical patch, right, an SAP critical vulnerability, and they went ahead and prioritized it and implemented the patch very quickly. Unfortunately, again, as Charles mentioned a little bit ago, we saw a lot of systems that were with the patch applied, but attackers already having access to the network with web shells being deployed. And as Charles mentioned, that still is the case in many business critical SAP systems today if you do a quick scan of the internet. So that's a very, very sensitive and critical situation. Again, this is the equivalent of kind of fixing your front door lock, but you have the thief already in the basement, right? So we've seen a lot of that, unfortunately. I think the most puzzling one for me is seeing some misinformation from SAP security vendors, like third-party vendors. We've seen cases where people were posting proof of concepts of the exploit that were actually not real. I think this created a lot of problems in the industry where defenders thought that the vulnerability was a file upload vulnerability, and then everyone started looking for web shells, thinking that was the only way they could have been compromised and an indicator of compromise. But the reality is that we saw through our threat intel network for SAP that attacks were happening even without touching the disk, right? It was a different type of vulnerability. It was a deserialization issue. And it became very clear now with the exploit made public in August 15th, that that those POCs were really misinforming defenders and putting people at risk. The second one, we saw another vendor who actually told, kind of put out a notification when this news broke out, telling customers that this wasn't a big threat and that exploitation was only possible with authentication, which of course was technically inaccurate and technically wrong, and that essentially put a lot of SAP customers at risk, right? Because you get that information, you're prioritizing risk on the defender side, and you're going to make very difficult or very different decisions if you believe it's authenticated and it's not a critical issue. So I think it just highlights the importance when it comes out to business critical apps, how important it is to have someone that you can trust and really not just get news or quote unquote intelligence, but get timely and accurate intelligence on the SAP security is very critical when these things happen.
Mm. Makes me think that there's like a disconnect almost between, you know, the defenders and sort of the SAP side. And Charles, it's, you know, in your experience, have you seen, like, what are some of the biggest mistakes or maybe some of the blind spots you might have seen in how companies that you work with or just, you know, observe have responded to SAP attacks? I mean, how actually prepared were they for incidents such as this on the SAP side?
Yeah, David, there's two things I want to highlight. And I want to emphasize that there are tons of organizations that still have actively deployed web shells on their systems. So they just simply didn't realize that they had to do more than just patch. And you know, every so often you see these zero-day mass exploitation events where a threat actor is pretty much broadly exploited the majority of the systems that are exposed to the internet before a patch has been made available. This is one of those situations where you have to think about that. So it's more than just supplying the patch. You do need to look for evidence of exploitation or backdoors that exist on the system. And you know, kudos to Anapsys for creating an IOC scanner that organizations could run to figure out whether or not their devices and their systems have been compromised. The second, I guess, big takeaway for me is that you know, as we were investigating a large number of compromised or suspected to be compromised SAP NetWeaver systems, the amount of security telemetry that was collected on those systems was pretty limited. So we saw, I want to say, a large portion of the systems that we reviewed didn't have any EDR solutions on it. So it was hard for us to get good security telemetry. We had to rely on the basic operating system security controls or the application level logs. And so just ensuring that organizations, you know, think about their entire technology ecosystem and ensure that they have good logging and EDR coverage to the extent possible on systems that are maybe not traditionally supported by EDR solutions. So people or organizations tend to have great EDR coverage on Windows systems. They tend to have much poorer coverage on non-Windows systems. And so to the extent that people get better endpoint visibility, that'll certainly help from a defensive perspective as well as from a response perspective.
That's great. So gentlemen, I kind of want to look ahead now. So systems feel like a turning point in the industry. I'm going to ask each one of you, what is one action that a CIO or a CISO could take today to ensure that their critical SAP business applications are protected in the future against these modern cyber threats? And maybe Dave, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, we can all talk about this, but you know, Charles just summarized it. I mean, we have an immediate action that CIOs and CISOs need to do, which is they need to run these IOC scanners. They have got to look for these web shells. They got to understand if they have backdoors deployed already. And we know these systems are exploitable right now. So if we don't take an immediate action quickly, we got a major problem on our hands. So we'll start with that one. And then you kind of back up for a minute and you look at these lifeblood systems like SAP, and you kind of bypass them in your mind if you're a chief security officer, because you're kind of thinking about, oh my gosh, how do I protect AI and how do I use agentic right now? And you know, visibility matters at the end of the day. So a lot of CISOs are thinking about what's coming forward with AI. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, you have to think back to these, you know, legacy systems like SAP, because suddenly SAP meets the cloud, meets AI, meets agentic, and you've created one of your core lifeblood systems at risk. And you start to think about the risk at a board level, CEO level of an SAP compromise, and I can't think of a scarier scenario than that. And so you suddenly have ransomware operators, espionage operators, you have disruption, you have destruction of data, you have manipulation of data, you have an entire range of outcomes on an SAP system that is a core record system for a company at risk with very little security controls wrapped around it. So what do we have to do? We have to think about this like we've thought about other major problems that might have occurred over the years, like IoT devices getting exploited, OT systems getting exploited, systems of record that really matter. This one has to be mainstream. And when you start to look at the number of SAP systems that have deployed security on them, you can probably count them on one hand, you know, a single digit percentages in those areas. So we have to fix that. And we got to create a wake up call for the CIOs and CISOs to really think about SAP and Oracle systems of record differently than we have in the past.
Yeah, that's great. Charles, I'm going to turn to you. I think I might know what you're going to say, but I'd love to hear what your one action for a CIO and CISO that they could take today.
Yeah, we've just got to improve the amount of security telemetry and visibility that we have on these systems. These systems are obviously so important from a Sarbanes-Oxley compliance perspective. We look at it from user provisioning, deprovisioning, reviews, and things, some configuration changes. But I think we need to do a much better job of getting better visibility at the operating system level and at the application level.
It's huge, huge. Cody, how about you?
Yeah, already some great comments here. I mean, I think it's very tight. Pull SAP fully into your mainstream internet-facing risk program. I think even though it's so mission critical, Dave made some very good points. I mean, it's you probably need to audit every endpoint that is touched SAP. If it does not need to be public, close it. If it must be reachable, put it behind strict allow lists. I think actually you'd be surprised, or maybe not everyone would be surprised, but a lot of organizations still don't have SAP in their incident response plans. That's obviously a major blind spot, as you can see now. I think actually on August 15th, when you saw the release new publicity about the weaponized POC, I think that's certainly something that can lead to even more exploitation of this. So if it's not in your run books, if it's not in your incident response plans, it's got to be. And if your SOC and IR teams don't know who's on call for SAP security, which might be the case because these are more legacy systems, then you're going to lose time, right? So I think just audit your processes, audit what's internet facing, close what you can, and then really to really kind of wrap that up, start thinking about how these endpoints are going to transition to agentic AI and where the soft spots are going to be with that, because there are going to be a lot of new soft spots.
That's a good point. Mariano, take us home. One action CIOs and CISOs can take today.
Yeah, no, look, I think my colleague's done a phenomenal job of giving great guidance here. Look, I think at a high level, I would say this is, as we're calling here, a wake-up call, right? I think fortunately in this scenario, there were many companies running SAP internet-facing in the cloud that they were not impacted because they were not using this legacy component, right? Which is really good news. But at the same time, I think it's clear evidence, right, that these threat actors have the knowledge, the capabilities, the intent to go after SAP applications with very, very specialized capabilities like the ones we've seen. So it's I think as a team said here, it's foundational that we bring. If you think about it, your generic security programs, so you have today on endpoint, you have an infrastructure, you have on different capabilities. It's almost ironic. It's a paradox that your most critical business applications are way subpar that, right? So integrating SAP into your vulnerability management program, integrating SAP into your SOC and threat monitoring program, integrating SAP into your incident response program. You really don't have to reinvent the wheel. That's the good news, right? It's about, you have all these programs, you have a DevSecOps program looking at custom code. How, like, just look at those programs and make sure that they are, SAPs shouldn't be out of scope. There is no reason today in 2025 why SAP should be out of scope, especially again, as you push this to the cloud, pushing this to AI. So I think that's a critical takeaway of like just bring SAP into your existing programs at par with your the rest of your controls. That would put you in a much better place to really hopefully prevent or respond very quickly to the next wave, because we're sure this is not going to be the last one that we see.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, thank you for that really great conversation. I know I learned quite a bit today, and I'm sure our audience did too. It looks like we do have some time left for Q&A, so let me quickly look in the chat and see if I can grab a couple of these. All right. We are running SAP S/4HANA in RISE with SAP. Are we exposed to these attacks? Mariano, I feel like that's a good one for you.
Yeah, that's probably for me. I would say if you're running the vulnerable components, if you're hosted on something like SAP, so if you're running SAP public cloud, like the SaaS version of S/4HANA, you're not exposed to this. If you're running on a cloud ERP private or you're kind of RISE with SAP private cloud environment, if like you potentially can be, very likely can be, if you're using the vulnerable SAP applications that were impacted in this attack. But I think I would say in general, as a generic way to kind of think about and frame this in your mind, it's also beyond this vulnerability. Just you need to know that in RISE with SAP environments, SAP is doing a phenomenal job in protecting the cloud infrastructure layer for you, the network, the hypervisor, the operating systems, but the responsibility of the data and application layers in those environments, it's still yours, right? It's a traditional shared security responsibility model. I know there was a lot of misconfusion in the past whether SAP was doing this for customers or they were supposed to be doing it themselves. Now it's very clear, and you can see a lot of really official documentation from SAP. SAP has done a great job of clarifying this. You are responsible as a customer on making sure that your data and application layers are protected. And this is the layer that we see impacted by the Zero Day campaign, and what we see is going to be most likely impacted in future campaigns. So just make sure that you have the right controls at that layer, and you should be in a good place.
Fantastic. Thank you. All right, the next question. Are boards and auditors paying more attention to SAP threats now? Dave, I think I'm going to send that one to you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I have an opportunity, much like Charles does and others on the call here, to talk to boards on a pretty regular basis. Fortune 500 boards are very mindful of the cyber threats that are occurring in their companies. Many of them experienced it now multiple times in many cases. But I would tell you, in the SAP sort of world meets security, it's not in a boardroom. And it's not in the CEO's mindset. You know, the words of ransomware and the worlds of, you know, breaches is, but as it relates to SAP, it really hasn't gotten there. And I think this is, you know, like we have for the call here, it's a wake-up call again. I mean, boards and auditors and executives have to understand the risk they have to an SAP system, which is, in many cases, like I said, the lifeblood of the company. And you can't live without it. So if we do have a ransomware on an SAP system, or we do have an attack on these systems, the revenue and cost impacts the companies is immeasurable. So this becomes a very significant risk for the board. I think there's more education that's required in this particular area. More pen testing requirements should be in. We should be putting autonomous pen testing to work on these systems like we do a lot of the rest of the network and endpoint and cloud components. We got to integrate it, like Cody said, to the front of our security posture management and detection and prevention management, not the back. And so SAP needs to move into the psyche of the boardroom and as a real threat and a real risk to the company.
That's good. And there's one more question here. It says, are there any IOCs and TTPs we can get to do threat hunting in our environment? I feel like this is a good question for probably Cody and Charles. Cody, why don't you start, and then Charles, you can add some color on that maybe.
Billy, thanks a lot. So first of all, this is a really great question, really great discussion. Thanks. So for IOCs and TTPs, I have to say we have actually published a full set in our research on our website, on our blog. I believe that's going to be linked to in the session materials. So you'll find file hashes, domains, IPs, behaviors for the CVE. But I think this audience knows indicators are really just a starting point. It's useful for sweeping through known compromises, but they age out pretty fast. So I think the longer term defense, kind of from a threat hunting perspective, look for new or modified files in SAP web directories, SAP services, spawning command shells, which should be unusual, scripting interpreters, outbound connections from SAP posts that are unexpected or are being sent to non-SAP parts of your network. Lots of other things like that. You know, you'll see lateral movement from an SAP host. Something that we've seen is that these threat actors don't stop at the SAP system. Once in, they look for cloud access tokens. They pivot to completely different devices, which is the reason why you have to audit everything that has been near this system if you have been exploited, and you have to go through those incident response playbooks that we've all mentioned. And I'll also add in that so there are some sources and methods we would like to protect. So without getting into operational detail, we have seen, especially in August, some chatter in closed channels. We think it's mostly to flex, mostly for ego, but we've seen the actors actually having discussion where they confirm this behavior. And we've also seen some strong indications that they in fact do use misinformation and kind of try to pump themselves up for that criminal side, not the nation state side, but for that cyber criminal side. I think if you have a threat intelligence team, if you're a large enterprise and you have a mature threat intelligence team, your threat intelligence team is maybe seeing some of the same chatter. So they should be extremely skeptical that really what they're seeing in there is necessarily true. So definitely a lot to do for the threat hunting team, definitely a lot to do for the threat intelligence team or your provider. If you're working with somebody like Mandiant or somebody else, they'll also be very well aware of these things.
Charles, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I agree with Cody on how to address this from a methodology perspective and how to hunt for exploitation and lateral movement. For a lot of organizations that may not have the skilled team or that the cycles to be able to go through that comprehensive methodology, I would recommend taking a look at the Onapsis IOC scanner. It's kind of a quick hit way to try to see whether or not web shells were deployed. And at a minimum, you should do that. Obviously, it's only going to find what it knows. The approach that Cody described is much more thorough, but the quick hits will certainly help a lot of organizations.
That's great. Thanks for that. And that brings us to time. For any other questions that come through in the chat, we will reach out to you individually to get those answered. And just a quick reminder to everyone listening that this session was recorded and the link to the recording will be emailed to you. And so with that, thank you again to Cody, Charles, Dave, Mariano. Appreciate the time. And thank you to everyone joining this session today. Have a great day.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.